From our studios in downtown Portland, Oregon, this is a Coin6 digital exclusive.
Well, thank you for listening to this week's Writer's Block. And I have sort of a blast from my past, my childhood, joining me this morning. Two authors, they're twins, and they co-wrote a book. And I'm so excited to have them on because I haven't seen them in, I don't even know, it's been like three decades. Hava and Danny Denenberg in Portland.
Hi there.
And hi, you guys co-wrote a book. It's called LGBTQ Twins and Their Siblings. And we are going to do a deep dive into that book. But I first want to get to how I even like found you guys, because I was kind of stalking you on Facebook because I remembered the Denenberg twins. And you know when you're bored at home and you're like, on Facebook, just looking up, like, I wonder what that person's doing. And I remember the Denenberg twins because of our bus rides, because you guys always got in so much trouble on the bus. Maybe I have a better memory of this than you do, but I was like, I wonder what that, and I remembered your names, Hava and Danny Denenberg. So I looked you up and I was like, lo and behold, not only did you live in Portland, but you wrote a book. So I was like, I have to contact them, even though they're not going to remember me. So thanks so much,
you
guys.
Well, we do remember you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you made more of an impression, I think, on me. So, yeah, it's crazy what a small world it is.
It really is wild.
Yes.
That was such a pleasant message to get in our inbox. And I was immediately embarrassed by our behavior.
Oh my gosh. I remember we would be on the bus and you guys would have done like something, you know, terrible or to get in trouble. And we would have to sit outside of your house and wait for your mom or dad to get home so the bus driver could tell them. I don't even know if you guys remember this, but I remember just sitting there on the bus. Yeah.
Consistently bad behavior. I think Hava and I had this kind of really quite poor reputation through probably middle school because we were just, there was something in there being two of us. And I think this kind of sibling thing got magnified because we felt like we had some strange empowerment in each other to like cackle or do whatever wild things we were doing. Right. I have memories of what we were actually doing, but I do know we were incredibly bratty, and I still feel embarrassed by that behavior.
Oh, that's a little. And in fairness, your older sister Rachel also, I remember doing a couple things. So you weren't alone, But I was pleasantly surprised to find out not only that you lived here, but also it seemed like you guys had really kind of mellowed out a lot since I remembered you.
Good to hear. Yeah. Good to hear.
And so, when did you both move to Portland?
Danny, when did you move here? Danny's been here for
12 years now. I celebrated my Portlandiversary, I call it that. And it was April of 2008 that I moved here. So it was right at the height of the recession.
Oh, great time, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. And I trailed her 4 years later. So I arrived in 2012.
Okay. Yeah. And you guys seem like you've really like embraced Portland. I know, Danny, is it you going through the college right now, the natural medicines?
Yeah, I actually, interestingly enough, I started out pondering naturopathic medicine and I started out at the naturopathic university. Then I transferred over to a school that just focuses on Chinese medicine.
Okay.
So it's the Oregon College of Oriental Medicine. So I've been there for going on 2 years and I'll graduate in a year and be a licensed acupuncturist and very excited about that. Although that's all kind of up in the air right now.
I know. And we're talking to you via FaceTime because we can't really do it. I'm glad we at least get to see each other this way, but it is such a crazy time right now. And Hava, are you the one who's involved in upcycling? I was stalking your Facebook pages more last night.
Danny actually has an upcycling art company.
Okay.
But I do, I'm a licensed therapist and I do social work and therapy, in nature. It's basically nature-based animal-focused therapy with clients. And, it's my dream come true. So I've been there for about a year and a half, and it's tremendously different, very different to work with clients in that kind of setting.
Yeah, no, that sounds really interesting. And so when did you guys decide that? Well, I guess first to backtrack, because I know you both had these this moment where one of you came out to the other person several years ago. So I guess give us the background on how that all came to be.
Yeah, so I think we recall it maybe slightly different, but I remember that we were sitting in my San Francisco apartment and we were just having casual conversation about both of our stories and coming out and when we came out. And we came to this realization how uncanny it was that that truly was the first time in our entire lives that we had this experience where this sort of cliche experience where, oh my gosh, we literally came out at the same time, but not totally. Like Danny, it took Danny longer on that journey to actually come out, but the moment at which we both realized was precisely the same time. Mm-hmm. And when I was living in New York at the time, and Danny was living in San Diego at the time. And we were just sitting there thinking, I wonder what other twins' experience are. Do they have a similar story? And we just became fascinated with the nurture and nature and, you know, what impacts that process. And if other twins had a similar process, we became very curious about that. And then from there, we thought, you know, what would it be like to gather stories? And it was a 5-year journey.
Yeah, it was 5 years. It started in 2013 in the fall. And that's when we, you know, started brainstorming. Do we know twins, you know, and who, and where are these twins? And it was mind boggling how many twins, who ended up in the book are actually here in Portland. Hmm. And
it's like a magnet.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really
a vortex.
We actually created a map in the book to show the visual of who knows who and who's connected to who. Mm-hmm. And several of these contacts came through my soccer community. One person knew a photographer who had just participated in a children's cancer project. And he said he was fascinated by this project and he ended up donating 100% of his hours, photographed all of the twins and did all of the photo shoots and became a really nice friend of ours. So it was an incredible process to gather these people. And it was fun. It was actually very satisfying to find one more set and to really experience how the enthusiasm of these twins to participate in this. They were all just very honored that their stories could be shared. And it was a very, I think, humbling process for a lot of the twins and a very connected process for them. A lot of twins came out with a different level of understanding and bonding of each other as a result of interviewing for this book. So that was something I think that Hava and I probably didn't imagine going into this.
Yeah.
So, and we're happy to talk about anything you know are curious about.
But yeah, I mean, what were some of the stories that you heard from some of these twins and siblings too, right? You spoke with some siblings as well?
Well, we had the siblings part. Getting the title right for the book was a process because we actually had like a little mini focus group in my backyard to come up with the title of the book with a couple of my dear friends and my partner and Danny and me, right? It was the five of us.
Yeah.
And we wanted to get it right because we didn't want to imply that everyone in the book identified as LGBTQ. Mm-hmm. So we put, and their siblings, but the siblings were actually twins.
Oh, okay.
So, but not everyone in the book actually turned out to identify as LGBTQ. So some of the twins, at least one of the twins in every set does, mm-hmm. but not both, not everyone.
Okay. There were some though that both did like you guys or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There were, what was the breakdown in the end? Was it, I think it was close to, was it about 30?
I want to say 50%, but
yeah. I think we went in thinking it would be, I think we were biased going in. Thinking that based on our research that it was half as likely or 50% likely that if one twin identified as LGBTQ, the other would. And I think it was lower. But you know what? We broke these statistics down in the foreword of the book. Mm-hmm. We easily reference that. But I think it was lower than, or possibly close to that, but not as high as that.
Yeah. And so what were just some of the things that they told you in your interviews?
You know, we had the range of stories. We had twins who really struggled with their process, like I did. I was closeted for a good 4 years. I really was very intellectual about it, and just felt like, why is it that I'm friends with, why do I have this like very strong curiosity and connection and bonding with the women in my life in a way that doesn't feel quite like friendship, mm-hmm. like where there's a longing part of it. There were other twins in the book who had a process like that. And that was very validating for me, who really struggled. And then there were twins who, it was a very natural process. It wasn't even a consideration. It was just, this is who I am. And why wouldn't we be born into a culture where this is just as normal as it is normal to be heterosexual? Mm-hmm. Who were much more like Hava. Hava had a much more freeing process. Hava can speak to her own story, but it was fascinating to see how many twins also kept this process from one another. Hmm. So that mm-hmm. surprised us. There were, I would say, actually, probably, if I had to guess, I would say possibly as high as 75% of the twins we interviewed did not come out immediately and tell their twins. And we had twins who felt like they kind of upstaged their twin. If like one twin came out and then the other twin hesitated because they didn't feel like they had that space to, mm-hmm. they didn't want to take away this process from their twin or have people think, well, just because this one twin came out, now I'm going to do this thing. And it's like a trend in the
right
to both come out whereas it was very authentic to both of those twins, but they felt like they didn't quite feel like their process would be taken seriously or something of that nature. So
yeah.
Hava, do you want to comment on any of the other stories that we heard about? I would say those are the things that stuck out for me.
Yeah, I think, by the way, can you hear my
yes,
cat?
Or... I love it.
Oh, you can? Okay, that's Earl Grey.
I love his name.
Yeah, he's such a cutie. He likes to talk.
Yeah, no, he just wants to be part of the podcast. I get it.
I might actually give him some, he loves to be in the garage.
Oh, so okay.
I might give him a little garage time.
It's not bothering me at all. Okay. But Hava, I know that you, it sounds like you, from what Danny was saying, were definitely the more comfortable of the two of you guys at first coming out. And I believe you came out first to Danny. That's how it went?
Yeah. I would say there certainly was a part of me. I wouldn't imply that it was completely like a piece of cake. I think there was definitely some struggle and confusion and some overwhelm. I remember seeing actually a therapist at Columbia who specifically worked with LGBTQ folks, and like asking her, like, how does this work? And so there was definitely some trepidation in the beginning, but it wasn't very long. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it was maybe like 2 or 3 months that I kind of was like, what does this mean for me? And what do I do with this? And where do I go? But after that, it was really very freeing and exciting for me. Mm-hmm. And certainly that was made easier by someone who was very flirty with me and kind of fostered my ability to even see that this was what was happening for me.
Right.
And, which for me ties into a larger theme that we came across in the book, which was this concept of epigenetics. Have you heard of epigenetics?
I was just listening to a Conan O'Brien podcast, and they mentioned, is it something about your ancestors and stuff that they do that impacts you? Do I have that totally wrong?
No, I think that that does play a role.
Okay.
For sure.
Yeah. I never heard the term until like a week ago, and they mentioned it in this podcast I was listening to. So what is it exactly?
Yeah, it's, and I'm probably not doing it justice. This is a very, very basic simplification of it, but it's basically the concept that it's sort of like a combination of nature and nurture, where your genes, the genes in one's body, can literally be turned on at different parts in your life, depending on the environment that you're mm-hmm. living in and what's affecting you. And so, I personally believe that I was always gay, mm-hmm. but I didn't realize that until I was in this situation that triggered my understanding of who I was. And at that point, it was literally like an epiphany, like, oh my gosh, all of the puzzle pieces started to fit together from the past that came together in those moments and had me realize, gosh, this is who I am.
Yeah. Did you guys, and I'm sure you talked to people in your book about this, did you come out to your parents together, or was it separately, and how did they take it? And what were some of the comments about that from the people that you interviewed too?
Yeah, Hava and I came out separately to our parents. Mm-hmm. Hava came out 4 years prior to me. She had that conversation, I think, initially with mom. And then,
no, it was both of them, actually.
Oh, it was both of them at the same time. Oh, it's so interesting.
Yeah.
I imagine that was mom. I think for me, it was actually mom. So Hava can speak to that piece, but we did come out separately to them. And I think by the time I came out, I had struggled and kind of beaten around the bush so much around this. Like, mm-hmm. I had kind of dropped these little seeds or crumbs of, I'm pretty sure this is also the same for me. It's interesting because looking back at it, we had a lot more people in our circle think that I was gay before they thought that Hava was gay.
Oh,
so it was so interesting that I was really the one who, you know, people were like, yeah, we kind of knew this, like this, we already sensed this a long time ago kind of thing. Like Rachel, our older sister, was very much, I was terrified to come out to Rachel. And she was like, you know, is the sky blue? Like,
right.
this is something that, you know, I surmised a long time ago. And she was very accepting and loving about it. And my parents, I think initially my mom, I think both of them intellectualized it a bit. Mm-hmm. They both felt like, maybe this is a phase, and maybe your connection to these women are, you know, is just a very intimate connection. And I think subconsciously it was my mom's way of protecting and not wanting us to be hurt. And yeah, that's what I sensed from her at the time. And but she was also very loving and very accepting and very compassionate and and asked questions. And then, you know, I started to, I think as the years have gone along, I think it's been about 11 years for me. She's really, it's really been beautiful to watch, her process around this, and to watch her language shifting into a she as opposed to a he. And, and you know, that's been very heartwarming for me. My dad as well, I think really, came to a place of acceptance. He didn't talk a whole lot about it. We, Hav and I lost our father, 3 years ago. So, yeah, we, it's quite surreal to refer to him in the past. He, I wouldn't say struggled with it, but he definitely was quieter about it. I think Hava, maybe you can articulate this better than I can, but it wasn't like he wasn't accepting. I think he was more maybe intrigued by it.
I don't know. I you know, I always wanted to ask him, what do you think of this? I remember telling him about my first girlfriend. And I remember talking to them over the phone in New York and coming out to both of them at the same time. I don't really remember him saying a whole lot. And I remember my mom sort of having a similar response that she had to Danny, where she said, well, you know, maybe just, you know, maybe you haven't tried J-Date enough, you know, and
J-Date?
And I was like, it's like J-Date, it's like a Jewish dating website. And I was like, no, I've really tried J-Date quite a bit. Like, this is not working. But I think it really, you know, my parents are extremely liberal. And that being said, I think it really, it's such a personal, when it's personal, it's different and everyone has their own process and it doesn't mean that they're against it. But I think that we're with societal conditioning. There's this expectation, right? You get married, you have children, the person you marry is the opposite sex, right? It's so ingrained. It's so deeply ingrained that I think there's a grieving process for a lot of parents who kind of have to go through their own process of letting go of that.
Yeah. Well, and also probably so, just they have worries about the challenges that then you're going to have to face in society with certain members of society anyway. So that would be a concern, you know, as a parent, just protecting their child. But yeah. And as far as the people you interview, because I mean, I have a good friend who's gay and he came out and his parents were not that thrilled with it. And then his brother came out. And I just imagine that was really hard for his brother, seeing the reaction from his older brother, from the parents. I mean, did people have some experiences that weren't great as far as, you know, two of them coming out to their parents?
Yeah, we definitely. I'm thinking of a certain set of twins that ended up homeless because they got kicked out of their house because their parents would not accept that this was so. And, you know, that's really common. There's a staggering statistic. I believe it's like 40% of kids who are actually on the street were displaced because they identify as LGBTQ. So it's pretty astonishing. I'm thinking of another set and several actually where religion was factored in, where the religious background of the family factored into a lack of acceptance for what they were hearing from their children.
Yeah.
And Danny, do you want to add anything on to that that you can think of?
I think that there were a lot of strong reactions that were not positive from parents, that were incredibly difficult to hear. Where I wouldn't, you know, I'm trying to think any of the sets that we interviewed where parents had a strong reaction to both of them. And I'm pondering maybe the Liskas, where there was quite a bit of resistance from both of the parents when they both had their coming out processes, where now they've evolved into, and that like the grandmother is like, who are you going to marry? You know, and things have evolved over the course of years, but where the reaction in the beginning was not accepting and was very harsh and fear-based. Because I do believe that people act from two places, either love or fear, regardless of how simplistic that sounds. I think probably even including our parents' initial response was from that grieving process that Hava talked about, came from a place of fear. Like, oh gosh, you know, are our children going to be okay? How are they going to move through their lives in this kind of unaccepting kind of place? And that's a large reason why I actually moved to the Pacific Northwest, was because I was struggling so much. And I felt like, what kind of community could I move to that where I could feel comfortable coming out? Because I was just on the cusp of this. Mm-hmm. And San Diego was like my college town, and very, my parents lived there, and it was a very comfortable place for me. And I felt like, I've got to get out of this bubbles up. I never expand. So yeah, we did interview quite a few. We interviewed 18 sets altogether, that span the spectrum demographically, everywhere from religion to age to like trendsetters way back in the Stonewall era of coming out.
I'm thinking of Jerry's story, actually, where he was born, I want to say in the 60s. Is that right?
Yeah, 60s. I think that's about right. Possibly the late 50s, given his age.
And his twin ended up dying from AIDS and never really came out. And so and Jerry is gay as well. So that was a really interesting story to see, like how he continues to live his life and still calls himself a twin.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of the Walker twins, who identify, I think, as highly feminine gay boys.
Okay.
at least that's how they kind of described it in the beginning. And their sister is actually a lesbian. Mm-hmm. And so that's really interesting. And there was a lot of pushback from both of their parents around that. And so that was really a struggle for them.
Yeah. Well, and just, you know, it sounds like from everything you're saying, I mean, I have two daughters, and they are so different from one another. And I really, it's made me really believe in the nature over the nurture part. Is that something that people just kind of come out who they are? Is that something that you both took away from this experience of interviewing all these people, or do you think there is a combination?
Sorry,
I love your cat.
This is Pistachio.
Oh, that's Pistachio. Okay.
Yeah, this is Pistachio.
Yeah.
Hava gravitates towards very cute, vintagey food names for kids.
I've noticed. but yeah, no, just like nature versus nurture. Did you learn that really people are who they are after all your interviews and even looking at yourselves?
Oh, it's so, to me, it's really complex. My position about myself has not changed. I have this inner knowing. And it's interesting because sometimes someone will say, well, how do you know? How do you know? And I sort of, you know, counter, not defensively, but how do you know you're straight? Mm-hmm. You just know. You just know that for yourself. You don't really question it. And you just are. And so that's how I feel. I feel like I just know this. There's this inner knowing. excuse me. Put the camera over here. Her tail keeps going back and forth.
She has opinions on this. Yeah.
Yeah. I think one of the takeaways was, it really did seem like there was this theme of you are who you are. Mm-hmm. And that being said, I think also just this wanting to honor that not everyone's experience looks exactly the same, that there were people who feel, you know, who feel like that can shift over time. Right, where you can identify as one way, and maybe that shifts. Mm-hmm. Whether that's your gender identity or your sexual orientation, and so I can only speak to my own experience in saying that has not changed for me.
Mm. Yeah, Danny, what about you?
Yeah, that I'm very much in the same boat as Hava is in that regard. I feel like this is just something that was, that I was born with, that, it's like that song from, who's the artist?
Lady Gaga, Born This Way?
No, but that's another great one. This is a male artist. Oh, what is the name of it? If I can't change, even if I wanted to, is the phrase, the stanza. And I think that sums it up. It's like, even if I wanted to, I wouldn't want to. Like, I remember a similar story when I was kind of coming out and going into the scene and like for the first time having this very much what felt like a second adolescence to me that I had. And I still mourn this to this day. Like I didn't really quite get the normal experiences that most kids get in middle school and high school in particular, because something always felt different. I always felt like, and Jenny, it's so interesting, like given like where we knew you from our past and thinking through all of these like elementary school and middle school experiences that just always felt very, when I was with boys, just something just felt like this isn't natural. Like this just isn't, but I didn't know that. I didn't have those words at the time. It just felt like I was different somehow.
You weren't chasing Dennis Kramer around on the playground like I was, is what you're saying.
No. I mean, don't get me wrong.
We were being chased.
I would say I was more chased in my later high school and like college years, whereas in middle school, I definitely had boy crushes. Mm-hmm. But even those crushes on like, you know, Max and Damon and whoever else, I still dated at the time, but they just always felt like I didn't want to kiss them. I didn't want to be alone with them. I didn't want to, all of these other experiences that girls my age were having. I was like, ew, gross.
Yeah.
that does not sound fun to me. But I just always thought, and for a long time, I thought I was just like repressed. I was like, maybe I'm just not. So it didn't even occur to me. All that occurred to me was that it just didn't feel natural to be with boys.
Like you thought you were asexual or something.
Yes,
at this point. Yeah.
Yeah. For a long time. And that was very troubling as an experience because, I think that was my impetus and inspiration for writing the book. I really felt like if this book could reach one young person earlier in their process where they read these stories and they feel like, oh, this is normal. It's okay if I'm a girl and I like a girl, or if I'm a boy and I like a boy, or if I like both, I think for me, there was so much like inner homophobia around this. Anyway, this is, I realize, a tangent to what you were asking around nature versus nurture. So I want to actually answer that question, which is that, yes, I feel like I was born this way, and I feel like I gravitated. This is where the epigenetics comes in, mm-hmm. and where things get grayer and more complex. I feel like I gravitated towards experiences and circumstances and people who turned those light switches on that my genes were already coded for. Mm. So it was like I spent 4 years. I think that, the last man I dated was, I was 29. And right around that time, I spent 4 years with Women in Recovery in a volunteer program in San Diego. Mm-hmm. And I was very drawn to this community and to volunteering there and the connections that I had with these women. And I feel like I was gravitating towards those kind of experiences in my life naturally. Like, I would have ended up there eventually.
Right.
It was just a matter of what things would facilitate that process faster.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Oh yeah, it does.
That's how I think about epigenetics.
Yeah.
Or it's fascinating. It's really fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not literal changes in genes. Mm-hmm. It's actual just a different expression of the gene. Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
Very interesting. So if people, you mentioned your book and how it could, potentially really help someone and their sibling, as they're going through this whole process, where can people find it? Is it online only where they can order it, or how can they get it?
So we have a very complicated website. It's very long. So I would say if people were interested that they could actually email, I can give my email, which is havalee18@gmail.com. It's havalee18@gmail.com.
Okay.
And that would be the easiest way, because our website is very long, unless we want to give a shout out to the website.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
So it's LGBTQTwinsandSiblings.com.
Well, that's not terrible. That's not like the longest
website.
Okay,
it's not that bad.
Ever.
It's not too bad.
Yeah, that's I found you guys. Well, from my Facebook stalking and then to that. So, yeah. You guys, I appreciate you doing this so much, and it was great to see your faces. And I'm hoping when this quarantine stuff is over that we can actually meet up and have a drink or something in Portland.
Oh, that'd be so great.
Yeah, I'll venture out of the suburbs and I'll come to the cool side of Portland where, you take all your visitors when they're in town.
The northeast side. What I do want to do, a quick mention of that Broadway Books is still selling our book.
Oh, so, awesome. Okay, I love Broadway Books.
Yeah, and I don't know what their process is right now, given COVID-19, where, I just saw a little mention of them on Instagram that they are doing orders over the phone.
Oh, and deliveries.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Yes, Hava and Danny Denenberg, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Danny.
Yeah, and I hope to see you guys soon in person.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's do that.
Okay.
The Coin 6 Podcast Network is your home for all sorts of content you can't find anywhere else. Visit coin.com/coinpodcast to see our entire library. And you can always subscribe to all of the Coin 6 podcasts on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.